Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parent Show at 92.6.
That was Duran Duran, Hungry Like a Wolf. It's ages since we've heard that song, isn't it, Georgie?
Probably since the 90s, Kathy, but I did enjoy it.
Since I was only a little girl. Welcome to The Parent Show. It's been a long time since we had a green show.
We did a show together, yeah. So it's good.
Georgie is our green parent. She's the one who is an example to us all, an inspiration.
No, I'm not. I'm trying hard to get inspiration from other green parents.
You're very modest. So every couple of months, I'd say, Georgie does a green show where we really look at issues around health and well-being and ethics and things that we can be doing better as parents. And tonight's show is all about nutrition and trying to get an understanding of what's in the food our children are actually eating. So, Georgie...
Yeah, I had my opening quote is quite funny, but it's by Claude Fisher, who's an American sociologist. He says, "If you are what you eat and you don't know what you're eating, do you know who you are?" And I thought that was super for all sort of, you know, the coffee and sometimes chocolate and junk we put into our bodies. It's probably good to understand a little better. So to try and understand our food and possibly ourselves and our children better, tonight joining us in the studio, we have Sally Temple. Sally's the founder of The Nutrition Place, which is a nutritional therapy clinic specializing in children and family health based in St. Albans.
So a very warm welcome to you.
Thanks for joining us, Sally.
Good, thank you. Thanks very much.
And our second guest is Patty Rundahl, OBE, the policymaker at Baby Milk Action. Now, Baby Milk Action is a non-profit organisation which aims to save lives and to end the avoidable suffering caused by inappropriate infant and young child feeding. So that is Patty coming up after Sally.
So Sally, just a bit of background. Sally studied nutrition for 4 years at the internationally acclaimed Institute for Optimum Nutrition, which I think most people would have heard of. Patrick Holford, who's very closely linked to the Institute. And she's particularly interested in children's health, which is inspired by her own young daughters who are aged 2 and 5. Thanks for joining us tonight, Sally. So we've got a few food topics we're hoping you can shed some light on for us tonight. The first one, bit of a contentious one. I've read a few articles on the sweetener aspartame, and although there's conflicting research, I tend to be cautious and stay as far away from it as possible. It is still being included in some mainstream food and drinks in the UK, though, and I've come across it very scarily in Robertson's Fruit Shoots. It's a controversial sweetener, and I'd love to hear from you what your thoughts on the subject are.
And also, my understanding of, first of all, well done on being able to pronounce aspartame, because it's such a scary word and it looks difficult to pronounce. And my understanding of e-numbers has always been a sort of codes for chemicals which can be used as food additives.
Should we get onto that afterwards? Once aspartame is kind of, should we get to the basis of aspartame first?
Yes. Great. Yes. There's so much to get through.
I know.
So Sally, what would you say about that particular sweetener?
Okay, well, you're right. I mean, aspartame does have an e-number. It is one of the e-numbers. But let's take aspartame first. It is a sweetener and it's used in place of sugar and mainly in drinks like squash and diet drinks like fizzy, like Coke, Diet Coke, Diet Cola and Fanta, that sort of thing. But it's also in Canderel, so sweeteners that people put in their drinks, chewing gum, and interestingly for children, it's in multivitamins, many multivitamins.
Really?
That you buy in Boots and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's right.
So you might want to have a look if you're giving your children multivitamins just to check that they don't contain aspartame.
I mean, the obvious question is, what harm is it doing?
Well, exactly. So there is a lot of conflicting research, but the long-term research, which is over sort of 2 decades, shows that there is a carcinogenic, which is a cancer risk associated with consuming aspartame. And it's also neurotoxic. So you might see symptoms like headaches, dizziness, tremors, or even migraines associated with consuming aspartame. Mm-hmm. So clearly this is something that we wouldn't be keen on our children consuming.
And that is something we're familiar with. Even I know that fizzy drinks would actually may have that effect on children.
Definitely. I think it's also when it's quite frightening where it's sort of hidden a little bit, like, you know, in the Robertson's Fruit Shoot, that's kind of a name you wouldn't expect to have it in, would you?
Exactly. So you do have to get quite canny with looking at labels. And there are some of those sorts of bottled drinks that don't have aspartame in, but you have to be really, you know, it's really looking at ones that just have the fruit juice and then are diluted with water rather than ones that are squash based. Okay. I mean, there's also side effects associated like depression, anxiety, irritability. So there's even more than just, you know, those ones. Mm. And in terms of children's health, you also there is some association with eczema. There's been some research shown that that could be a link as well.
And is there any research on amounts? So say, you know, we know that there are lots of children in the country who regularly would have a fizzy drink in their lunchbox, unfortunately, or maybe a fruit shoot or whatever it is, and lots of different things that would make up quite a lot of sugar on a daily basis. So is there, can you ration it? Is it okay to have a little bit or none?
Well, the government guidelines are that actually if you eat it in a moderate, you know, if you have aspartame on a moderate basis, that it's okay. But clearly people have different levels of sensitivity, so it's very difficult to have a broad approach to what is acceptable or not.
Right.
And many parents, if they're wanting to follow a healthful approach with their children, the choice really is really try and avoid it. And then when you're in a circumstance such that that's the only option, it's therefore becomes more okay.
Yeah, I like that. I use the precautionary principle. So, you know, do some internet research on aspartame, and there's so much out there. And they say some countries it's been banned, and in some research says Canada it's been banned, and in some research it says it hasn't been. But I think because it's so conflicting and you're not sure, and with amounts, I just say precautionary principle, if at all possible, avoid. I do that with my kids. What do you think, Sally?
Yeah, so yes, from a healthful point of view, you would say avoid. If you're in a situation sometimes where squash is on offer, you know, when you're going to a toddler group and that's what has been provided for the children.
Yeah.
If you can have water, then that's great. But if you end up with some squash, you know, I wouldn't say it's the end of the world, but you're clearly going to want to try and avoid it where you can.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Shall we move on to e-numbers? Goodness me. No, as I said, you know, I associate e-numbers with colouring and preservatives and flavour enhancers and thickeners. And often look at the list of ingredients, say, in a product and just say, oh, there's E-numbers, that's it, I'm not going to buy it. And I know that all E-numbers may be not artificial, as often presumed, such as vitamin C is an E300, would be classified as that. My question is, how do we know which to avoid? Like, is there a list of
good and bad
E-numbers? So where is it?
Unfortunately, it's not quite as simple as that. I'm sure with lots of Google searches, you can come up with some. Well, there's a million and one different lists out there.
Sure.
But there are artificial colours and the artificial flavour enhancers and preservatives have been closely linked with hyperactivity. And they do tend to say on labels, they are usually a bit more informative than just the E-number now. It tends to say the E-number and then what it is. So if it is a natural colour or it is a natural preservative, it tends to then describe where it is. So if it's vitamin C or it's vitamin E. For example, vitamin C, as you said, is E300. Vitamin E is 306. And then citric acid is 330. And those are preservatives and antioxidants that will, in a natural way, keep the food from going off and changing colour.
And you've mentioned antioxidants. That's a good thing. Someone has emailed us about antioxidants. They're good things. As far as I know, they stop you getting cancer. And is that correct?
Yes, antioxidants are in lots of different fruits and vegetables. And it's one of the reasons why we eat fruits and vegetables. They're very healthful. And in this perspective, in terms of E-numbers, they're not in the food from an antioxidant for a health point of view. They're in there as a preservative. So they're in there to stop the colour from going. So, for example, if it's a tart with apples on it, it wants to keep the colour of the apples the right colour. When it's looking at E-numbers, that's what it's about, rather than providing you with lots of antioxidants.
Is that okay in that form? So even though it is working as a preservative, in that form, is it still okay?
Well, in that form, it's considerably better than having an artificial preservative. So if you want to have something that's got a longer shelf life, you need to be looking for a natural preservative rather than an artificial one.
And what is a natural preservative? Would you get those foods, for example, from a particular type of shop? You know, a natural, you know, is it organic food that wouldn't have preservatives as much?
Yes, I guess you would find the natural preservatives more in organic foods. Unfortunately, it's not as clear cut as, you know, these foods are really good and these foods aren't, because there's so much complexity. You end up, unfortunately, having to just read the labels to see.
And that's
the
a very strong
them.
Message that you're giving us, is educate yourself and read things before you buy them.
It
Don't
is.
Just
there
trust
isn't,
what they look
there
like.
Isn't something really simple that you can look at. It'd be great if there was.
It's a shame, isn't it? I mean, they did introduce that traffic light system for fat and salt, you know, and sugar, so that you can see in certain products in supermarket, it's got a very high salt content or... but not so much in it for the detail. Isn't that right?
That's interesting, because that's a shame, because e-numbers is one thing that people do are quite wary about. So it's almost nice to get a list of sort of 5 to 10 of the good ones.
No, they get such a bad press.
You will find, actually, that most supermarkets are now starting to stop using the colours, the artificial colours, e-numbers in their products, because of this really close relationship that's been found between the e-number colours and the artificial colours and hyperactivity.
Okay, very interesting.
I wonder if we can go into something else. That is, Kathy just mentioned about the fats, good and bad fats. So when I was pregnant, I was really pleased. I read Patrick Holford's Optimum Nutrition Bible. So I followed that pretty well for my health and for my two kids now. So basically, what I know about it is that there's sort of few good ones, mono and polyunsaturated fats. But my understanding is really surface level on that. So I was wondering if you would be able to maybe give us a rundown of the different types of fats contained in our food and the effects that they have on our bodies.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so fats are really vital for all sorts of health. They're important in terms of absorbing the vitamins. There's fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin D and vitamin E and vitamin K and vitamin A, and they all need fat to be able to be absorbed. And also they're important to keep your cells healthy and to give you healthy skin and healthy eyesight. But diets that are high in saturated fat, obviously, are not healthy, and we want to try and reduce saturated fat in relation to things like weight gain. But if we're looking at children's health, then monounsaturated fat, as you rightly said, is very full of health. It's particularly good for brain health and for developing nervous systems, as well as hormones that are involved in blood pressure and general cardiovascular health. So monounsaturated fat sources are things like olive oil and olives. Avocados are great, full of lovely monounsaturated fats. And nuts like almonds, cashews and pecans. Now, for children, we often say they shouldn't be eating whole nuts under the age of 5. But if you have them in like a nut butter, so you get almond butters and cashew nut butters.
That's a good
idea.
Or
you grind them up. Really nice.
That's what I love about this show. You just find such simple advice.
So that's a great, great way of getting some good fats. Also, quality eggs, you find monounsaturated fats in those too. And then polyunsaturated fats, so they're the essential fats. And we call them essential fats because you have to get them from foods. You can't produce them in your body. And they are vital for brain function and for growth and development. So they are particularly important for children. And we see in things like ADHD and children with temper tantrums and sleep disturbances and even allergies to a certain extent, that essential fat deficiencies can play a really key role in those conditions. So there are two types of essential fats. There is omega-3 fatty acids and fats that many of us heard of the term omega-3. And these are brilliant in terms of reducing inflammation. And then we have omega-6 fats, and these ones promote inflammation. And really, to be healthy, to have a healthy immune system, you need a good balance of both fats. Now, many people eat a lot of foods that are rich in omega-6 fats. And if we think what we feed our children, the food sources of sunflower oil, so cooking oils and eggs and meat and cheese, feature fairly heavily. And actually, there's an argument that we eat too many of those things, certainly as they tie in with the saturated fat. But the omega-3 sources are really under-eaten for most people in the Western world. And we need to try and encourage our children to eat more of these food sources. And these are found in fish, and so oily fish. And we're talking here about salmon and mackerel and sardines. And that's a great source of the omega-3 fats, really, because it's in a form that is really usable by your body. There are plant sources, and the plant sources are from seeds like flax seeds and pumpkin seeds, and also rapeseed oil, so the oils of those foods as well.
Sally, and also walnuts. Can I just interrupt you about oils? Because this is a question that lots of people wonder. You know, is it always a good idea, is it always healthy to use olive oil or extra virgin olive oil? Some people don't understand the difference. I'm one of them. Is it okay, good, optimal to use those oils in cooking for your children? Or should you use rapeseed oil? I've seen it in the supermarket, but I don't know what it is or what it tastes like. So which oil which oil do you use at home? That's the question. Let's get to the heart of this.
So olive oil is a brilliant all-rounder. What you need to be slightly careful with olive oil is not heating it too high. So when you don't want to cook it above about 180 degrees, because then you start altering the chemical setup and the nature of the fat, and it can go a bit more rancid.
So if you put your salmon in the oven, say,
then keep it at 180 degrees or under,
oil on it, mm-hmm. you should really keep the temperature lower.
Yes. And same with roasted vegetables and that sort of thing. And you can put a bit of butter in as well to cook with.
Okay.
But you don't want to be cooking most of the cooking fats at too high a temperature.
I recently came across rice bran oil. Is that right? That someone said to me, I think it can handle the temperature, higher temperatures. So that's a new one.
and rapeseed oil is quite good if you do want to do higher temperatures too.
And is rapeseed oil very good for you? Can you drizzle it over salad?
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yes. Okay. It's a polyunsaturated fat.
So it's good for our kids.
And flaxseed is good, but it tastes a little bit bad, doesn't it? I used to have to put it in honey and yogurt for my kids because flaxseed, I think, is brilliant. You should have it every day.
If you don't like the taste of flaxseed, then having some ground up just to sprinkle, we call them sprinkles at home, to sprinkle on top of porridge or breakfast cereal is a great way. If you want to get your omega-3 fats
that's a good idea.
Having it just available.
It almost powdered.
You can buy it ground up or you can grind it up in one of those little blenders that we often use to do baby food and that sort of thing.
Yeah, great. Sorry, I interrupted you there. You were about fats.
That's okay.
So fats, that's really been interesting. Thanks so much. And especially with the examples, which we may have to put onto the website for anyone who's missed them. And I think that the other question that I wanted to ask you is about the changing of our food. So I've heard people mention things such as our food isn't as nutritious as it used to be. Eating an apple today is not the same as 10 years ago, etc. You hear a lot of talk like that. Mm-hmm. But it's quite hard to get sort of research and get to the bottom of that. But do you think, just your opinion, that food has changed nutritionally over the last few years and what the reasons could be?
Well, yes. I mean, nutrients have depleted over the last 50 years by up to about 40%. And that's quite horrifying to understand, really.
In our food content.
In our food content, okay. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is down to the desire by farmers to have a higher yield. So for higher yields has unfortunately resulted in lower nutrient value. Mm. And so there is a lot of work being done to try and increase the nutrient value. But that is, at the moment, that's how it stands. Also, a lot of plants naturally develop their own defence system against disease, and this is called phytonutrients or phytochemicals, and they're very, very helpful for humans to eat, and they combat disease and all sorts of, you know, they're very healthy. But unfortunately, when we're spraying plants with pesticides, etc., the plants then don't need to produce their own phytochemicals. And so we don't find so many of those in produce as well. So unfortunately, they are becoming depleted in phytonutrients as well, a lot of fruit and vegetables.
And we know that lots of people in St Albans order lovely vegetables from certain manufacturers in boxes, arrive in the door, and it looks fabulous. That kind of produce, you know, the natural and organic food, would you say that is a safer bet in terms of nutritional content? And
yes, I mean, the nutrient content is arguable if there's more nutrients in organic fruits and vegetables. The research on balance probably suggests that, yes, there is more nutrients. But the real issue with organic produce is that it doesn't have pesticide residues. And a lot of common fruits and vegetables have up to 40 plus residues of different pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, etc.
And that is not something that can be washed off?
Yeah, that's going to be my question. So it really has been absorbed into the...
Well, even if it's on the skin, it doesn't really wash off. You wash off bacteria when you wash the plant, when you wash your fruits and vegetables, but unfortunately you're not really washing off pesticides.
Okay.
So if you want to avoid pesticide residues, there are some produce that you would buy that have heavier residues than others. So there's like some dirty plants, if you like. So tree fruits, for example, apples, peaches, nectarines, they have higher levels of residues, as do berries, unfortunately. They're very healthful.
Strawberries.
And green leafy vegetables. But there's other vegetables that are quite clean. So even though they have been sprayed, actually, if you're going to buy organic, you possibly don't need to with those because they don't have the residues.
Are they the ones with the protective skins, like bananas or oranges?
Quite a lot of them, yes. And onions, sweet corn, pineapple. So if you think they've all got quite protective skins.
That's good to know if people are also looking at the cost. Although some organic is not actually as expensive as, you know, because I did a bit of research on it. It's not quite as expensive as
one of my very good friends is a potato pathologist.
Very
interesting. So she used to specialise in potato disease and agronomy.
Oh, interesting.
And her job used to be going to the supermarket. She would go and inspect the potatoes from the farm. And, you know, so she understood the whole process of the organic potato and what was being done to the non-organic potatoes. And every time you eat a baked potato in front of her, she'd say, "Oh, don't eat the skin. That's not an organic potato." Like, because she understood what was sprayed on those potatoes. So she every time I think of baked potatoes, unless it's organic, I wouldn't eat the skin. There's my little potato
really
tail.
Interesting.
Only an Irish person would have a potato story.
Unfortunately, potatoes do have quite high residues, quite a lot do.
I guess also being in the ground, they'd probably observe... the word is?
Absorbing
them.
Yeah.
There's also one of the questions that's been on my mind is about this conflicting advice on whether children should have a certain amount of cow's milk per day. Do you think it's actually unnecessary, or even if you look at the research, people could say it's even possibly harmful? Once again, I know it's just your opinion, but what would you think about that?
Okay, so first of all, is milk necessary? Well, milk is necessary in that for babies, until they're weaned, it's a whole food source. So in that respect, it is. After the age of 2, when you can change whole milk to semi-skimmed, really the purpose of milk is around getting calcium, sufficient calcium for bone health. And really you need up to about 500 milligrams of calcium a day for a 3-year-old, rising up to, for a 19-year-old, up to 1,000 milligrams. And that is between half a pint and a pint of milk. But you can also obviously have equivalents. There's other sources of calcium that you can have. So as well as the dairy products, you've also got fortified foods like cereals and juices. Dark green leafy vegetables are a superb source of calcium, as are dried pulses and even things like baked beans. So you want to have enough calcium, but that doesn't have to necessarily come from milk and dairy. So in terms of, is it dangerous, could it be harmful? There's the whole saturated fat argument. So if you're having semi-skimmed, you're having less fat. But also, if children are drinking too much milk, sometimes that means they're not eating enough. They're not eating enough of their meal. And the consequence of that is fairly common, of an iron deficiency anemia in children who are really getting their nutrients still from milk, when really they need to have it from food. Conversely, actually, you get children who have a lot of milk and also have a lot of food. And so, therefore, they're having too many calories, unless they're absolutely running around like mad things all the time.
Yeah.
So there is that risk. There's obviously the, I don't think when we talk about organic, we talked about organic milk. But milk has high levels of pesticides, up to 12 different pesticides. It also has residues of antibiotics and growth hormones. So
but not organic milk.
Not organic milk.
That's when you definitely buy.
So out of all of the things, if you ask me which would I suggest going organic, then that would probably be the one.
Okay.
And so therefore, you know, any risks associated with that you may think of, then that would be avoided.
Now also, we've mentioned allergies a little bit tonight, but there seems to be evidence of a significant rise in allergies in our children over the past 20 years, and lots of reasons put forward by the, you know, for this. Do you think the food our children are eating is a factor, Sally?
Well, up until a couple of years ago, the thought was that, yes, you know, when you were pregnant, when you're breastfeeding, and then when your children are young, you make sure that they are avoiding, or you avoid as a pregnant woman, and then your children avoid certain known allergenic foods. However, thinking has really changed on that in the last couple of years. And now the thought is very much, actually, don't want to avoid things, because it's about developing a tolerance to a wide range of foods, really, before the child is one. And actually introducing things like wheat and dairy whilst you're still breastfeeding can be really helpful too. Apparently the breastfeeding helps your body to then, helps the absorption of some of these foods.
And that's interesting, because I was just thinking about peanuts, which is one thing obviously, but if there's an allergy in the family, would you say still to introduce it just to see how it would go, or avoid it then if you're worried about your child developing the allergy?
Well, obviously, if that's the case, you'd want to watch it really, really carefully. The advice is still that you can introduce it. But if you've had a really severe allergy within your family, I would really look to introduce that in a very safe environment.
In front of a doctor.
So yes, you can get this organised.
Yeah,
to do
that. Exposure.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Things in
just
a sort
to make
of a controlled
sure.
Way.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've chatted a lot about things that our children should not be eating, and then also which the fats was really helpful about what our children should be. But do you think you could give us just a quick rundown of what you believe the core principles to a good diet are?
Absolutely. Okay, so this is really getting back to basics, isn't it? Yeah. What makes a good meal? And really, it's a mixture of carbohydrates that children need for energy, and ideally they're whole grain, although with children it doesn't have to be all the time. It's good to have a balance. And this is rice, pasta, bread, that type of food. You also, at each meal, want to have some protein. And protein is particularly important for children because it's what helps them grow. So for this is good lean protein, so eggs or cheese or lean meats. Pulses are often underrated, so lentils and hummus and that sort of thing for children is fantastic. And then lots of fresh vegetables and fruit, and those help keep the immune system healthy and help keep our children nice and healthy. I say, when I'm talking to children, I say five a day keeps the bugs away, and it's sort of quite a nice way to describe it to children.
Indeed.
Now, Sally, we've learnt a lot from you tonight. Now, we just want to flag up where people can actually meet you and have a consultation if they're interested. You run the Nutrition Place in St Albans, which is a nutritional therapy clinic specialising in children's health and weight loss. And I know you offer a range of nutritional services suitable for the whole family. The website, I'll just read it out, is www.thenutritionplace.co.uk, and people can ring up and meet you in person.
Absolutely. They can either ring, or there's an email address too. So
brilliant. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks, Ellie. It's been lovely having you here with
us. Lovely to have you.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Community Radio in West Hearts. Radio Verulam.
Don't you just love that track? We're talking tonight about food and nutrition on The Parent Show tonight. And we've just been speaking to Sally from the Nutrition Centre in St Albans, Georgie.
Nutrition Place. She was great, wasn't she? Great. She gave me so much information that I've been looking for. It was super.
I know. And we've got another fantastic guest, Patty, on the phone. Patty Rundell.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hi, Patty. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Okay.
Patty, I wonder, so let me first, we did give you an introduction in the beginning, but to let everyone know who's just joined us that Patty's from the Baby Milk Action, which is a non-profit, and you basically, or maybe you can tell us
a little bit more
about what you do.
We're a very small organisation, but we're part of a big international network of groups all around the world that are trying to stop the baby food companies from promoting artificial feeding of babies or anything to do with babies under three, so that we want them to sell the products to be able to make them safe and make sure that all the ingredients are as safe as possible and to give good instructions, but not to promote them. And we've been doing that for about 30 years now, bringing in legislation to try and sort of make sure that all the companies abide by the rules set by the World Health Organization and actually provide good, proper information for parents so that they can make wise decisions.
And Patty, one of the lovely things about the organization is that it's, you know, you support both breastfeeding and bottle feeding mothers.
Yeah, as far as we're concerned, you know, it's not obviously... It's very clear from all the health arguments that breastfeeding is the safest way and it's a normal way to feed. But if a mother doesn't want to do that, or if there are all sorts of reasons why she may not want to or has difficulty, then it's up to her what she does. But what she must do is have good information. And that's what we're saying to the companies. Please make sure that you make the information correct.
Because there has been a lot in the media recently about baby formula and sort of parents are finding it very difficult to decipher what on earth is going on.
And what goes into the formula as well, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder, maybe you could actually give, I don't know if it would be possible, but maybe give us a better understanding of what goes into the formula that people give children.
Oh, well, I mean, formula is sort of fairly standard. People look at it and think, my goodness, I couldn't possibly make that, because the companies love to use very, very difficult and complex words that make you feel, oh my goodness, that is amazing. But in fact, basically, it is, you know, cow's milk. I mean, some mothers don't even know that it's cow's milk, skimmed or full fat, liquid or powder. And then they add lactose, which is a sugar, a milk sugar, or other carbohydrates. They might not even use lactose. Depends on which country you're in and how much other sugars you're allowed to use. But all these things are set by law in the EU, so there's a certain amount of sugars that they can have. Then they've got vegetable oils, vitamins and minerals. But what the companies, there's a standard in essential ingredients that all UK and EU milks must have. But there are also, the companies are allowed by law to add other ingredients as the case may be. And this is something that we think is really bad, because that means that they add all these optional ingredients which may not have been tested properly, and they flag them up with health claims or nutrition claims, and they then make the parent feel that this product is significantly better than the other product. Now, the fact is that if an ingredient was good and was proven to be essential, then it would be in all the formulas. And that's certainly where we're advocating, is that you should have standard formulas, that all the formulas are the same.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's really wrong that one baby should have, or a mother should have to go to a shop and see all these different things and say one's good for the eyes and one good for the brain, one protects a baby from infections. All nonsense, this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should be a standard. You should know that when you're buying an EU-based milk, that it has been properly tested and that all the ingredients are properly tested and as safe as possible, and that they're going to be delivered in as safe as possible. That's the ideal.
And, Patty, another issue for parents who are bottle feeding, they're very scared of hygiene issues and getting it wrong, because goodness knows, when you're a new mum, it's very complex, you know,
it
in the middle of the night
complex.
You're trying to sterilize bottles and you're terrified of anything going wrong.
I know.
And we're in a first world country.
It's so scary.
Parents get it in the neck all the time. But the thing is that, unfortunately, if you look at the way formula is made, the trouble is it's made in factories. I mean, it's cow's milk that's got to be transported, and then it's got to be dried and in factories, and it can pick up bugs. I mean, and that the formula that you buy in the shop may look sterile and look, because you pull back the silver foil, but in fact it's not sterile at all, and a good proportion of them contain a quite a dangerous bug. So WHO and all the health bodies are saying, no, you must make the formula up with water at 70 degrees to kill off any bacteria that
happens
to be in.
That advice does alter it. You know, some, I think, manufacturers of formula don't say that.
Hip research
has
gone on, because they're wanting to put in their probiotics and other ingredients. You see, again, more ingredients that haven't been properly tested,
mm-hmm.
haven't been proven. Some say they're even dangerous for babies. You know, you're really taking your baby's life in their hands. And I don't want to alarm mothers unduly, because there is a certain level of safety that all milks must have. But it's these added ingredients that they're allowed to add, as the case may be, that really bother us.
Okay.
And why we're working for this standard, so that all the ingredients are pre-authorized. So all the pediatricians, all the health bodies in the UK are just saying, please, if you've got an ingredient, make sure it's safe, then put it in all of them.
Yeah,
you know?
that really makes sense, because I was also like doing a bit of research, and obviously that 2008 China scare with where melamine was added is really frightening. And just wondering about mums in the UK, and especially to our listeners, where would you recommend they get their formula from? I think no one would want to buy from China anymore after that.
Well, it's interesting, because the Chinese are now buying up land in New Zealand, because they can't sell the milk to the mothers.
Oh, that's
so the Chinese companies are buying up land and then shipping that land back as New Zealand, but it's actually managed by the Chinese.
Oh.
So the thing is, it's all about testing. And what we need to do as parents and health campaigners is to make sure that all our milks are tested, because there's elements of risk in any human process. That's why breastfeeding is so much more safer, because it's delivered straight at the right temperature from the breast straight into the baby's mouth. So as soon as you take that away, you've got the teats, the bottles, and the transport, everything else that can go wrong, because it's all down to human error, really. And that's what happened in China. I mean, people were making a little bit of money, so diluting it and putting all this stuff in. So, I mean, it's just human nature. If they'd had proper testing, they would have stopped that.
Do you think that they, because also doing a bit of research, I read that they spend a huge amount of marketing on the formula, where, you know, very little is done to promote breastfeeding. But why are they not testing it? Is it because they are spending most of the money on marketing and kind of assuming that people will remain slightly ignorant?
One doesn't know how much testing is going on. But, I mean, there's a fantastic report that I'd recommend people to read by the First Steps Nutrition called Infant Milks in the UK. And if they go on our website, they can get a link to it. But it's really good, because she's looking at exactly what goes in the formula and actually saying, well, we need to be testing a little bit more. We need to be confident that we've got regular... In the EU, I mean, we hold ourselves up high as if we're better than the Chinese, but we don't regularly check. We take so much on trust on what the companies tell you is in the formula. Mm. And this is all down to this whole approach of, oh, well, they wouldn't, would they? Well, the fact is, companies will do anything to try and get ahead.
We're a very trusting nation.
Yes, we are. And also, it's sort of, it's a bit risky to say a mass uncontrolled trial, but basically what they like to do is send it out with all these claims and then say, oh, well, actually, we haven't got any complaints, or nobody's ringing up. But this is really crazy. We shouldn't be trusting the companies to tell us whether they've got any problems. We really need to have a system in place that they're regularly tested, and that all the hospitals are all, you know, reporting back of when problems will happen.
Oh, yeah, especially on the amount of children that are formula fed. I know that breastfeeding, especially in the UK, is not that high.
Yeah.
But for the moms who are formula feeding, can you give any advice or direction, just going back as to what to do?
What to do. That's the thing, is that they need first of all to make sure that they've had all that information. We actually have a film that's all about infant milks in the UK, which has all sorts of pediatricians and health workers who are totally independent of the companies. You'll get loads of films of companies telling you stuff, but we felt that we needed to make this film, this Baby Feeding Law Group, which is a coalition of all these health bodies in the UK. And that milk goes into what's in the ingredients, and if people want that, they could contact us and see whether they can see it through their health professionals or something. But that's an interesting thing that explains to you what's in the milk and how to make it up and all the rest. The official advice is all the milks are the same, and that you shouldn't be going and paying a huge amount more. So, in fact, there's not a huge difference between the milks, okay?
Yeah, definitely. And Patty, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been really insightful. And I'm hoping that people who'd like to read a little bit more, would you be able to give us your website address?
Yes, www.babymilkaction, all one word, .org. And they can go on there and get ideas to campaign and to help. And the international, we haven't had time to go into that. The whole international campaign of why babies die because they're not breastfed. This is really important that we recognize this, because, I mean, at least we have healthcare systems here where we can rush in and help babies. But actually in developing countries, often that isn't the case. And so that's why we have 1.5 million babies dying every year, because they're not breastfed. So if people want to help us, we're a tiny little organization, it would be really, really nice to have some support from your listeners. So thanks very much for having me on.
And thanks for coming on the Parents Show.
Thanks so much, Patty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Radio Verilla.
was Ollie Murr's Troublemaker, a special track for our own little troublemaker, Claire Healy, who's joined us in the studio.
That was a nasty name.
She's not running
it. I was just singing along and dancing to that.
It was tongue in cheek.
Thank you very much.
Tonight's show, as you know, has been about children's nutrition, family nutrition. Yes. We've had great guests, Georgie. Thank you for lining them up.
Oh, great. Like to- yeah, just to thank them, because Sally Temple from the Nutrition Place was just super. And she is based in St. Albans. So if anyone wants to get hold of her, just to repeat her website address, it's www.thenutritionplace.co.uk. And then we had Patty Rundle, OBE, the policymaker from Baby Milk Action. And I just thought she was really, we could have got into so much more. And it was kind of getting a little bit frightening, wasn't it? About, what did she say? 1.5 million children possibly die every year.
Children in developing countries.
So have a look on the website. There's also, I forgot to mention, we didn't have time as well. There's a Nestle boycott because Nestle is not following any of the marketing procedures. So have a look on there. Sign it up if you'd like to. And if you'd like to support it, and I'm trying my best not to buy Nestle at the moment, so no Kit Kats for me, which is probably a good thing. So if anyone else wants to follow it, it's a worthwhile cause. Have a look on their website. I think it was babymilkaction.org.
Yes.
So, have a look if you'd like any more information.
Georgie, when are you back doing the next Green Show? Do you know?
We haven't set a date, but I think it will be January. And okay. We have got quite an interesting guest lined up, but I won't mention it until... confirmed.
Top secret.
Da, 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 da.
She's very good. Claire, how have you been?
Yes.
I was raring to go, St. Albans.
Thank you. Yes, raring to go is on the printing presses as we speak. So the winter issue will be out a week on Monday, which is fantastic. So
great. People look forward to finding out where we can go to meet Santa. And what other activities are lining up at the moment?
Yes, yes. We've got, there's. I mean, this time of year is just, it's for children, isn't it? It's just the time of year. So I've really gone to town and I've been researching where Santa is, where the Pantos are, where all the grottos are, you know, what's going on. It's going to be, it's fantastic. There's so much locally. We really, really celebrate it. I love the whole Christmas spirit is just brilliant. And of course, all the lights have gone on. We've got into this, you know, just everywhere you go now, gradually the lights are coming on over the next couple of weeks in the local area. So it's going to be really... it's going to feel very festive. Have we done any Christmas shopping yet? Go on, Kathy.
Does anyone else do this? If you're ever near a shop and you see a toy that's randomly relevant, you just buy it and you just sort of do it so literally within 3 minutes. So I was in Boots the other day and I just bought loads of stuff in one basket for loads of different kids.
Do you then put them away and forget about them?
No, I put them in a special cupboard.
Yeah,
in our house.
You've got that's a special cupboard. secret cupboard.
That's a very grown-up thing to do.
And I have to say, Georgie, one of the things I'm not good at, which I know you probably are, is there are ways of buying ethically.
I know.
So maybe you could do us a little snippet on next week's show.
I could mention just
shopping.
One thing that I came across this week, which was awesome. I'm not sure if they had it last year. We did a Christmas show, but I don't think we mentioned them. But Friends of the Earth has got a great website with Christmas presents on. Really divine things. There's a great pair of recycled slip slops in black, but they look trendy like you'd buy in the St. Albans High Street. I've got my eye on them for my sister.
Fabulous.
But really nice, classy, mainstream things. So I'd really recommend anyone who's interested in supporting fair trade and supporting smaller groups to have a look
and
at
perhaps
that.
Perhaps we'll put those up on our, you could add a post to Facebook on our Facebook page.
That's a really good idea. It's really good to think of something different, isn't it?
Yeah,
not necessarily the sort of main big manufacturers as well.
Oh, exactly. Because you know what the best part is that you know the money you're spending goes towards a group and it really makes a difference.
Yeah.
Plus then the gift doesn't have as much of an impact on the environment. So two birds.
Very good.
Bam.
So Claire, you've obviously been on the phone to Santa, have you?
Yes, I've got my Santa hotline. Yeah. I've got my Santa app, which is counting down the days. The days, minutes and hours.
If she really means that. She actually does have Santa.
I'll show you later. It's fantastic. If you haven't got a Santa app, then have a look. Just Google Santa apps because there are all sorts and they play little songs and they'll tell you how far it is.
Is that the one that tracks him on the night moving across the globe?
Yes, that's the Nordic. It's run by the Space Centre, isn't it, in the US and they track that, which is really, really clever. And you can track that from the 1st of December. So that's really worth doing because you actually see, you know, you can see where he is and you can show the children. And it's good for geography as well. And you look at, you know, what countries he's going over and all this sort of stuff. So, but there are little apps that literally will tell you the number of days and where he's going. Or just Google them, the Android and iPhone ones. They're brilliant, really, really good. But I thought it was the season to be talking pantos. I thought it was the time of year. It's the time when we're all starting to book them now, really. They're not, they haven't quite started. They start sort of end of November, the middle of December. But I think it's worth thinking about where you want to go. And I thought I'd do a bit of a run through of the ones that are on locally. Of course, we've got Aladdin at the Auburn Arena, which is our main one. But there's a few peripheral ones as well. There's a showdown at the Abbey Theatre, which is always a bit of a smaller one. It's called The Witches. It's not really a, it's a Roald Dahl one, The Witches.
Love that book.
And that's on, which is a bit of fun. Bit different from the Panto, if children want to do something
this
a little bit.
The Abbey Theatre?
The Abbey Theatre, down near the New Westminster Lodge, yes.
Okay.
It's at the end of December. I can't remember. I think it's about the 27th, something like that, for three or four nights. We've also got one in our local cinemas. We've also got the Harpenden Public Halls. We've got Dick Whittington, 15th to the 22nd of December. There is the Welwyn Garden City. We have the Jack and the Beanstalk, which again was, they're nice, these sort of local ones. Radlett Centre, Beauty and the Beast. I don't know, what's your favourite?
There's also
pantomime.
I want to go to the mall.
Yes, I know.
I love going to see Rapunzel at the University of
Hartford. Oh, are you? Fantastic.
Yeah, on the 16th of December.
Rapunzel. Yeah, brilliant.
That's a hot favourite in my house.
You either love pantomimes or you hate them. They're kind of that you know, people love
cringy,
to go.
Slightly cringy, but I think
they're
great.
Yeah, but I think over the years, as I've grown up, I've found that I quite like them now, because I understand the adults. Obviously, I did a few years ago as well, but I'm quite a grown-up. But I think the adults understand that bit, and they seem to have become more adult orientated, so that
they've got a double
bring them
layer.
In.
So
yeah.
You can laugh and your children can laugh.
Yes, and you can cringe when your grandparents laugh as well, you know. But they are great. So there are all sorts. There's Peter Pan at Aylesbury Theatre. Hitchin's got Puss in Boots. Cinderella's at Milton Keynes. The Gruffalo at the Arts Depot near Finchley. So you could go,
do
go all over the place. Yeah, you can do the circuit. And if you really love them, there's loads. We've got them all on our website, raringtogo.co.uk/St Albans. And we've also got some tickets that you can win on our website as well to see Jack and the Beanstalk at Welwyn Garden City at the Hawthorne Theatre.
Oh, great.
So there are lots and lots to choose from. So if we've got time, have we got time to run through some of the Santa's grottos?
We certainly do.
We could do a few. Now, there is one which I think sounds, this is my personal favourite. It's the biggest one, it's London's biggest grotto, and it's at Cruise Hill in Enfield, Springtime Nurseries. It's one of their garden centres. Along Cruise Hill, they have quite a few garden centres. And this one's got this huge grotto with a simulated snowstorm and Rudolph and his friends.
Ooh,
you don't have
fabulous.
To book. You can just go along. It's children are £8, adults are £2, and it's open throughout the time that the Springfield Nursery is open. But that sounds fantastic. You know, that's on from now, I believe. They're all sort of starting around about now. Some of them are a little bit more specific. Where else was a good one that I thought? The Inn on the Park have got a couple of dates that you will need to book, 15th and 16th of December, when Santa's going to be down there. He's going to be visiting, and there's going to be crafty stuff going on down there as well. The Snow Centre, of course, is a really good one in Hemel Hempstead, at the Jarman Park, isn't it, the Snow Centre. They have Visit Santa on the Slopes, £5 for half an hour, and obviously there's real snow, so it's a bit more authentic up there as well, which is really good. Another local one, we got Willow's Farm, of course. If you go down and see Santa in his grotto, you receive a golden key to enter his toy shop, and then you can pick your own present. This is for children, Kathy.
I went with my kids last year. Alice
Moore.
I couldn't believe how many options there were.
yeah. Choose your own is really bad. You'll get the children staying for hours, won't you? And another one of my favourites was at Knockcut's the garden centre just down in Smallford. They have they've got a Santa's grotto, which is open every weekend up until the week before Christmas, and then it's every day. They've also got a Santa's post box, and you post your letters to Santa, you go back the week after, and your reply will be hanging on the tree. And they've also got some sort of prizes that you can win as well. They advise booking to see Santa. It's £5.99 down there. but again, great thing. They're also doing tea and breakfast with Santa at Knockouts, so you can book in for those in their little restaurant.
And last but not least, a very important event coming up is obviously our Oliver James evening in conjunction with Riverbanks Nursery School in Harpenden. That's on the 30th of November. If you still want to go to that and get a ticket, just contact Riverbanks Nursery School on 01582 461 608 or by email sarah.hayman, H-A-Y-M-A-N at riverbanks.co.uk. I just had to squeeze that in before the show ends.
That's all right. You can carry on now.
So thank you very, very much for joining us. Thanks for all those great tips, Claire. They can go to your website and find all the information anyway.
Yeah, it's all on there.
raringtogo.co.uk. And thanks to Georgie and all our guests tonight. And a last thank you, last but not least, our fabulous sponsors, Neave Solicitors. Have a good evening and see you next week.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors.